Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart. Brian Myers is missing again. I don't think he likes us anymore, Ron.
Is he working? Is that what he's doing?
He says he's working, but I'm not so sure.
I think it's a permanent vacation.
I think he just said, you know what? I quit. I'm not going to co-host anymore. No. He's just been overwhelmed with some things going on with work. And I think I think he's going to be back next week.
Great.
So
that'll be nice.
So we'll pray for his quick return because we do miss him on this program. But anyway, it's been a great week. I did some traveling up northeast Iowa. Went up to Dubuque and Plattsville for some work stuff, and so got back last night and I'm tired.
Yeah,
that was a lot of driving.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, the UK is now leaving the European Union. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of Trump had a powwow with evangelicals, and we're going to be talking about that a lot today.
Yeah.
So with somebody who's there, actually, he's on the line with us. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Terry. This is Terry Schilling is joining us. He's the executive director with the American Principles Project. Welcome, Terry.
Hey, thanks for having me, Shane. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, not a problem. So you were at the big powwow. So
Yes, I was. It was an interesting event.
Okay, so just tell us, when did you first learn you were going? Were you personally invited, or how did that work?
I wasn't personally invited, but I was extended a ticket through the Susan B. Anthony list.
Okay.
The good folks over there, Marjorie Danenfelser and Billy Valentine, offered me a ticket. They were one of the prime sponsors of the event.
Ah, gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, for some reason, I think my ticket was lost in the mail or something. I don't know. I didn't. I wasn't invited. Shocker. Unless everybody who's listening today haven't been paying attention, you'll know that I'm a never Trump guy. Now, you feel differently about that, so I think this would be a good conversation. I want you to kind of make your pitch to our listeners about why I'm wrong. So
I think the 30-second version of why I'm supporting Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton can be summed up in two words: Supreme Court.
Okay.
I'm very worried about the effects of allowing Hillary to nominate left-wing judges to the Supreme Court, who will probably be there for the next 30 or 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Examiner had a story last week where they said that they pointed out that they did the math, basically, of the justices and their ages and who's likely to retire and who's not, and how many justices Hillary Clinton will get to appoint to the court. And their finding was that if Hillary's elected, the court is going to swing to the left until at least 2050. I know that sounds like a much further off, but I mean, it is the next 30 years, which makes a lot of sense. So I just think that allowing her to name justices to the Supreme Court, and keep in mind, they bat 1,000, they don't ever get it wrong. Allowing them to do that and control the Supreme Court, you're giving up on the right to life, you're giving up on the right to bear arms, you're giving up on freedom of religion and a host of other issues, and I'm just not willing to take that risk. And I think that we should do everything we can to take that shot, that last shot, to at least stop the bleeding.
Okay, fair enough. So you go to this event because obviously Trump has had some problems with evangelicals, even though he says, I want them all. Yeah, and he's only won, I think, a majority of evangelicals in one state. I think that was Florida, when he actually had competition anyway. So what did he say to help try to change the mind of evangelicals? I mean, when you got there, I mean, what did you learn from Trump?
So I'll start with the two really good things that I think he did that really impressed me. First of all, he doubled down on his pledge to nominate pro-life justices to the Supreme Court. Now, the reason that that's significant, most people that I tell it to, they're like, so what? Every Republican candidate says that. Well, they don't. Every Republican candidate says, they use nuances for it, right? They use euphemisms. They say, I'm going to nominate justices that are going to interpret the Constitution as it was originally intended, or a strict constitutionalist to the Supreme Court. Trump is going the extra mile and saying, I don't really care about all this political correctness stuff. I'm going to nominate pro-life justices, and I'm pledging that to you right now. It's a big deal, and it shows you how far along the pro-life movement has come and how mainstream it's come. Now, that's a billionaire, formerly left-wing presidential candidate like Donald Trump is saying, yeah, I have no problem nominating pro-life justices. The other thing that I think it's really impressive that he did is he pledged to repeal the Johnson Amendment to the IRS to the tax code. Mm-hmm. And for those of your listeners that aren't familiar with the Johnson Amendment, Lyndon B. Johnson, when he was a senator, had an amendment that altered the tax code to allow the IRS to take away the tax-exempt statuses of churches when their pastors would make political comments. Mm-hmm. And what it's done is it's taken power away from the churches, and it's taken influence away from them, and really relegated them to the back of the line, when really our churches should be actively engaged in the culture and in politics. There's no reason. I mean, churches form our moral compasses. Mm-hmm. By teaching us about the Word of God and morality. And there's no reason why we should be limiting their freedom of speech, especially when it comes to the most important issues of the day, such as who's going to be our next president. And so I thought that was incredibly powerful and bold for him to take that on. Mm-hmm. It's very risky, but I think in the end it'll pay off.
Yeah, I do have to give him kudos for bringing that up, because I mean that's something that nobody's really been talking about. I haven't even heard any of the candidates prior to, him being the presumptive nominee, discuss this issue. So kudos to him for bringing that up. Now, I'll ask the obvious question: why can we believe him? How can we believe him?
I guess you kind of have to take people at their word when you're in the campaign. Mm-hmm. And trust but verify, right?
Right.
So what you have to keep in mind is that it would be literal insanity. So let's say, for example, that Trump let's take what we know, all right? Or let's assume something right now. Let's assume that Donald Trump actually wants to be a good president and wants to win, and then wants to win re-election for a second term.
Okay.
What that means is that when he's making all these pledges and coming out and saying all these things about what he's going to do as a conservative president, if he doesn't do this stuff, and if he betrays us and becomes a full liberal during his first term, guess what's going to happen? Ben Sasse or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio is going to primary him in his first term. Mm-hmm. And there will be a revolt. His base of support, the Trump supporters, they've been very defensive of him. They haven't defended any of his previous liberal statements. What they've done is they've said, well, that's what he did in the past. And
true.
I mean, this is at least for the most part. This is what he's done in the past, but now he's come to our side and he's seen how bad things have gotten. And, he converted because of Obama and how bad Obama was. But I think that, if he were to do anything like nominate an openly pro-abortion justice to the Supreme Court, the conservative movement, I mean, all the pro-lifers that voted, he got a lot of support from pro-lifers. I mean, that
right.
They might not be, activists, but they do feel strongly about the issue, and they still voted for him. But they're not going to vote for him if he does that again and is challenged by a primary opponent, and if he does any type of gun grabbing, goes along the Democrats on that. I mean, heck, the NRA will go after him like crazy. They can't afford to have a Republican president be a gun grabber.
Right.
So that's I think right there, just assuming that all right, he's not insane and he's not, you know, a secret agent for the Democrats. I think that he's going to keep true to a lot of his promises. Will he get every single one of them accomplished?
Well,
I mean, that's really tough.
Right. And I don't think anybody's, you know, here's the thing. My position is, yeah, I'm never Trump, but that doesn't, I mean, I really hope if he is elected that I'm wrong. He has an opportunity to win my vote, you know, for re-election, and I really do want him to be a good president. So, but I also understand he does have to work with Congress, and I think another concern people have, and maybe you can address it, is are we going to end up with a guy who's kind of the center right equivalent to Barack Obama as far as misuse of executive authority? I think there's some concern there too. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. I think that I know what he's done is he's pledged to overturn all of Obama's executive orders,
which he can do.
But I don't know. But I can tell you this. I can tell you what I do know. I know that Hillary Clinton will be even worse, and she'll not only expand executive power, but she will take it in a much worse, even further left than Obama did. Just because she'll be able to. But I don't know. I think you're going to need to be strong as an executive just to reverse a lot of Obama's stuff. But when you're pushing on states, you know, states' powers and their ability to govern themselves, I think that's a different story. I don't know. I mean, this is a guy that from day one has been against Common Core and the principles behind that. So we'll see. I don't think he will. You know, most guys that are against the Common Core, you know, especially at the principal level, I think of federal overreach. I think I don't know. He might overstep on some issues, but he definitely won't be as bad as Hillary.
Okay. Well, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Terry Schilling, who's Executive Director of American Principles Project. I want to shift gears here a little bit. There's a couple things that I think happened in the news that I'd love to pick your brain about. The first thing is the Supreme Court overturned executive amnesty. That's like, wow, I'm actually surprised that happened. How significant is that in your mind?
I think it's a big deal, and I think it tells the president and Congress, hey, listen, if you want to do immigration reform, you can't do it unilaterally through the executive branch. You have to work through Congress, through the people, and get a compromise worked out. And, you know, we can't just have disorder. You know, we're a nation of laws, not men, like George Washington pointed out. And, you know, I think that's the biggest, that's the most significant thing about this. And that's the message that I'm taking out of it personally anyway.
And then the biggest news this week is the UK voted to leave the European Union, which the polling models seemed to be off because it seemed like the polling indicated it was good. They were going to stay, but they ended up the leave group won 52% to 48%. So how big is that? I mean, and how's that going to impact, you think, of, you know, our economic policy and Wall Street? And
well, you know, I think it's a big deal, and I think that what we're seeing right now is, look, over the past 15 years, but really it started in 2008. There was a huge correction. People are hurting. The economy is stagnated. People aren't getting as good of jobs. They're feeling more and more betrayed by their government and by their leaders. Now, the left has already named their boogeymen, right? They've named rich people and people on Wall Street and
right.
Republicans and all that as the enemy. And I think that – I don't think people buy that. I think obviously the Democrat voters and the leftists do. But I think that there's – I think people – are doubting that, but they know that something's wrong. They just don't know exactly what it is. And because they don't know exactly what it is, they're starting to just revolt all across the world. And I think that that's what we saw yesterday, is they're tired of the stagnation. They're tired of seeing rich people get so much further ahead while they're struggling and not getting getting ahead and having to work a lot harder. Meanwhile, their kids are graduating with tens of thousands of dollars of student loan debt and they can't get a job. Now, that's not to say that these people don't want to see rich people get rich or richer, but they want to get ahead too. I mean, they just want equal opportunity. And so I think you're seeing that play out in England, and I think you're going to see that. I think we already saw it play out with the nomination of Trump, right? I think we're going to see it play out in our own general election. Here. I think people are revolting, and I think that they're tired of the status quo. They don't really care about us. You know, I see all these groups like No Labels and all that talking about, hey, let's fix things. Let's not fight. Let's stop the gridlock and let's get along and get stuff done. I don't think people care about working together.
Right.
And I think they're fine with gridlock if they think that the intention of the gridlock is to stop harmful policies and to help people.
Right.
They just want people to help them. I mean, they want to get better. They want to stop having to watch the news to see what's going on in Congress and how their lives are going to be impacted. They want prosperity, and they want their kids to have a better future. And if you focus on that, you get rid of all the discussion about ending gridlock. And I mean, it's, you know.
That's true, because like, right now it's like, yeah, I want them to be gridlocked because anything they pass seems to be bad.
Exactly. And it's this whole notion of, I spoke with a guy yesterday, and he said, you know, all this gridlock in Congress is terrible, and, you know, both the Democrats and the Republicans, you know, their policies are going to hurt the country, you know, and this gridlock is the worst. And I said, yeah, but it wasn't going so well when they were all working together either.
Right.
You know, the compromises that they would come up with. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I just think we need strong leaders. We need a Reagan to come in and fix these things. And I think that's what we need to be looking for.
Terry, it's been a pleasure. We are out of time. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. You're listening to Terry Schilling with American Principles Project. Hang tight. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance you need. So, continuing on with our conversation about the conversation with Trump that took place between Donald Trump and 900,000 so evangelicals, social conservatives. We heard from Terry Schilling with American Principles Project last segment. We wanted to kind of bring another perspective in on this meeting, or about this meeting. So we have joining us Michael Ferris, who's the founder of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, also the chancellor. I think you're still a chancellor at Patrick Henry College, and you wear a couple other hats too. But welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Helmet, but that's okay.
Say again. So you wrote an article at the Christian Post, basically declaring the Christian right dead.
Yeah.
So why is the Christian right dead as a result of this of Trump and this meeting?
Well, first of all, I in the article point out that I was at the very first meeting of the Moral Majority in February of 1980 in Indianapolis. I was the newly minted Washington State Director. I was a young lawyer, 4 years out of law school. And I started that state chapter, and it eventually was the largest state chapter in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I was a part of the beginning. And there were really two overarching principles that were motivating us at the founding. One was that we were going to vote for a change. We believe that born-again Christians had been silent for too long, but we were going to vote, but we were going to vote according to principles. And then secondly, we were going to vote according to character. We knew that nobody would be perfect, but there were some basic lines, and if somebody was over the line, we wouldn't vote for them if they were over the line on principles or if they were over the line on character. And so what we're seeing now is essentially somebody who is so far over any line of character and has no principles, all of his principles are written on an Etch-a-Sketch,
right,
that we don't believe those principles anymore. And so if the principles that motivated the beginning of the Christian right are gone, then I think that the movement's over, and we just should simply say we're the religious sorority of the Republican Party.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, and your article reminded me of a book I've read. Chuck Colson wrote a book called God and Government, and he actually advocated for Christian leaders not to endorse. Is that something you think? And that I think about this because it seems like this this current circumstance evangelical leaders find themselves in is precisely why Colson wrote that. Do you think Christian leaders should just stop endorsing?
Well, no, not when there is a proper person, but we shouldn't always endorse just because the person is Republican.
Okay.
The whole argument that the lesser of two evils is essentially the argument that we're hearing.
Right.
With only a couple of exceptions, Jerry Falwell Jr. being the most prominent one, who supported Trump when there were still
other choices
on
yeah.
the table. Most of the people are just saying, look at him holding my nose. I'm going to go vote for Trump because he's better than Hillary. Lesser of two evils.
Okay.
And in any other context, we would call that situational ethics. I just read a Barna poll this morning. It was released maybe 6-8 weeks ago, but I read it today, that about 2/3 of Americans now believe that it's good for a couple to live together before they get married. And not terribly surprising, but very disappointingly,
right.
A lot of born-again Christians, evangelicals, say the same thing. And so this is the equivalent of Christians saying it's okay to live together before you get married. Because if the things that we said about Bill Clinton, about his character,
mm-hmm.
We have to take all that back, every bit of it back, and say, no, the real reason we were opposing Bill Clinton had nothing to do with his morality. He was a Democrat. That's
right.
it.
Right.
And so so we're just the worst of hypocrites if we don't hold to some kind of absolute standards. And if there are no absolute standards relative to political candidates, then I guess it's okay to support Donald Trump. But if there are any absolute standards at all about anything, Trump's over the line.
So I don't want to say I'm playing devil's advocate because I don't want to advocate
okay.
for the...
You can play devil's advocate.
Okay. Because I'm actually...
You ask me Trump questions.
Yeah, I'm actually with you because I'm another Trump guy too.
I know.
But with... just for instance, a couple things Terry brought up last segment. He said, I'm concerned about the Supreme Court because whoever impacts the Supreme Court this next term or two could... turn the court further to the left for the next since till at least 2050 is what he said.
Well, two of the most prominent social conservatives that are never Trumpers are, I would say I'm one of them, and Robbie George is another.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie teaches constitutional law at Princeton, practices, has been mentioned as a possible Supreme Court appointment himself at times. And I teach constitutional law at Patrick Henry College. I've argued in front of the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't buy the argument not one little bit. For one reason, and that is the Republicans on the Supreme Court are not that much better than the Democrats. the affirmative action decision yesterday, a Republican wrote it, saying it's okay to take race into account in student admissions. Obamacare, a Republican wrote it. Roe versus Wade, a Republican wrote it. Obergefell, a Republican wrote it. And so, you know, please tell me again the decision that threw religious freedom into the trash can. Justice Scalia wrote it. Justice Scalia said that parents have no constitutional rights in this country, not any at all. Now, so if that's our hero, if that's the Republican standard on the Supreme Court, you know, I hate to tell you, it's not that good. And so when people who live, breathe, practice, read, teach constitutional law say this is a bogus argument, I think people should pay attention to that.
And he also mentioned, too, I guess Trump actually promised to repeal the Johnson Amendment to the IRS code. Thoughts on that?
Well, if he could do it, that would be good. But presidents can't repeal laws.
True.
He was well scripted on Tuesday. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
He picked a few things. But if we're going to sell our birthright on moral issues, didn't get asked about abortion.
Mm-hmm.
He's able to buy us off on abortion because of tax exempt status. Really? Is that what
that's a good point?
We fall into in the Christian right that we're concerned about tax exempt status. You know, the only people that really have to worry about taxes. Churches if they're operated correctly, would never pay taxes because they're not actually making a profit. It's really the deductibility of the donations that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an okay thing. I would be for it. I think the Johnson thing was wrong, but it's not such a big deal that we would say, yeah, I'm going to vote for the strip club guy because he's going to help me on my taxes.
I love how you put that. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Michael Ferris, who's the founder of Homeschool Legal Defense Association, Chancellor Patrick Henry College, and among other things. And we're talking about why he's never Trump and how the Christian right is dead as a result of the direction it's taking with the rise of Donald Trump. Is there anything that could be said or done that would make you change your mind about Donald Trump?
Yeah. Number one, he has to appoint me as the vice president. Number two, he has to say, Mike, I'm going to give you control of every issue except for trade with China. Number three, he has to say, I don't want to live in public housing, so you live in the White House, I'm going to stay at Mar-a-Lago. If he says those things and then promises to stay on vacation for 300 days a year, I would vote for him.
Well, hey, nothing's impossible, right?
Nothing's impossible.
It seems like you've been thinking about this.
Imaginatively, why not dream?
Yeah, right, right. Well, hey, you're dreaming big, so I appreciate that. That's great. So, what can be done? Well, first of all, a couple questions. Have you decided who you're backing at all? Or anybody? Have you found?
Well, there's a lot of there's meaningful discussions going on with a couple of groups of Never Trump people.
Mm-hmm.
That are trying to find a suitable candidate, and you'll have to have just because the way independent candidacies work, you're going to have a vice president immediately as well.
Right.
And so so they're looking for a ticket. And I expect to hear something really soon. I'm frankly surprised that it's Friday and I don't know what people have come up with. Several people have been tried, several really good people have been tried, who said, I think it's the right thing to do, I think it's winnable,
mm-hmm.
but I just don't feel God's call for me to do it. That's what several people have said.
Yeah.
And so if that materializes, then I'm going to, get behind that.
Okay.
And if it doesn't materialize, I'm just going to write myself in.
At least you agree with yourself.
Yeah,
so.
I vote with the person that I agree with, about 80% of the time.
So, do you think the libertarians kind of blew their shot at consolidating some of the Never Trump vote?
They did. If if they would have had a strong pro-life libertarian, that would have been really worth looking at.
Yeah, I was like shocked. It's like you got two guys that are barely libertarian that were nominated. Yeah, it seems they're struggling with some of the same problems Republicans are.
They're linos, libertarians in name only. I mean,
Moving forward, is there any what can the Christian right do to, I guess, get the point where we're not just cheerleaders for the Republican Party anymore?
This may be solved generationally. With the exception of me, pretty much, most of the Never Trump people are under 55. I'm 64.
Okay.
So I'm kind of the young end of the old guys, but I'm still, I've got 19 grandkids, so I can't be a young guy anymore.
Yeah.
Russell Moore, Al Mohler, a lot of the younger people, and I'll tell you that among, the students of Patrick Henry College, the alumni, the people that I know, there's almost nobody that's a young evangelical that's on the Trump bandwagon.
Hmm.
And so I see some hope for the future. I think we need to have a rethinking of what it means to be an evangelical who enters the public square with their faith intact.
Right.
I think that's going to be issues like advancing International Justice Mission that's doing great work on sex trafficking and so on. That's got to be part of our agenda, kind of a Wilberforce element. But it's also got to be, we've got to be for life. We've got to be for other principled issues, including limited government. I believe that limited government's a moral issue.
Mm-hmm.
Debt's a moral issue because we're calling our children to pay for our debts. My grandchildren should not be paying for my parents' Medicare prescriptions. But that's what's going to happen with all the debt that we've got. And so those are moral issues. And so we have a clear understanding of a robust moral philosophy. I think there's hope in the next generation. I think this generation of leadership has forfeited with the situational ethics approach that they've adopted to back Donald Trump.
I'd have to agree. It's like I keep asking some of my Christian friends who are backing Trump. It's like, where's the line? You've got to have a line somewhere. I mean, I ended up voting for Mitt Romney. I didn't endorse him or even put a yard sign up, but I said, Trump, I can't.
Mitt Romney was a hard... I voted for him, too, and I'm not sure that I should have, but Romney was a decent man. His personal life, you don't find him bragging about having affairs with married women. He didn't own any strip clubs, and he hadn't been doing the kind of things Donald Trump does in stiffing people in business contracts.
Thanks. So, hey, we're out of time. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, bye.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. We talked a little bit about it, in the first segment with Terry Schilling on the American Principles Project. But I just wanted to bring up a news article. The UK leaves the European Union. Now, this was a close vote. For as far as referendum goes, yeah. So 52% says leave, 48% said remain in the European Union. And as a result of this vote, Prime Minister David Cameron is to step down by October. He was a person who advocated remain, and obviously he didn't feel like he could lead the nation to leave the European Union when he disagreed with that. And I think his party was split. I think he's a Tory, if I remember correctly. So it's more of the conservative. That's probably actually, from those who know British politics, Tory is probably more of a centrist, still center-right, not necessarily far-right political party. But I think he's stepping down, obviously, as head of the party. Because if you're not aware of how the parliamentary system works, basically the head of the party, when your party wins, the head of the party becomes the prime minister, at least with the head of the party within the parliament system. So he's stepping down with that. He's stepping down as prime minister. He's urged the country to vote remain, but he was defeated despite London, Scotland, and Northern Ireland backing standing in. The UK Independence Party leader, Nigel Farage, I think that's how you pronounce his name, hailed it as the UK's Independence Day, while Boris Johnson said the result would not mean pulling up the drawbridge. Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon said was absolutely determined to keep Scotland in the EU, so a second Scottish independence referendum was now highly likely. That I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
We voted against leaving UK, but we're going to leave the UK so we could stay in the EU.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me at all. So
I wonder if it's primarily economically motivated.
That could be.
Somewhat.
I mean, yeah, they're going to have some bumps in the road, but, you know, German Chancellor Angela Merkel expressed great regret at the outcome, and the EU chief said they expected the UK to begin negotiations to leave as soon as possible, however painful that process might be. But Boris Johnson, the ex-London mayor and public face of the vote leave, who is now a front-runner to be the next prime minister, said there was no need for haste about severing the UK's ties. He said voters had searched in their hearts, and the UK now has a glorious opportunity to pass its own laws, set its own taxes, and control its own borders. After another leading leave campaigner, Labour's I'm not even going to say her name, his name or her name, Jessica Stewart, I guess, said the UK would be a good neighbor when it left the EU. The pound fell to its lowest level since 1985, as the markets reacted to the results. Later regained some ground, but it was still 8% lower on the day by mid-afternoon. It's going to pick up, and frankly, I think you know, Great Britain has a great opportunity to set an example for the rest of Europe who, well, they're seeing out-of-control immigration. They're seeing out-of-control taxes. And Great Britain has a chance to, United Kingdom has a chance to set another course. So it'll be interesting to watch. Donald Trump had a statement on the Brexit referendum. He said, the people of the United Kingdom have exercised the sacred right of all free peoples. They have declared their independence from a European Union and have voted to reassert control over their own politics, borders, and economy. A Trump administration pledges to strengthen our ties with a free and independent Britain, deepening our bonds in commerce, culture, and mutual defense. The whole world is more peaceful and stable when our two countries and our two peoples are united together, as they will be under a Trump administration. Come November, the American people have a chance to redeclare their independence. Americans will have a chance to vote for trade, immigration, and foreign policies that put our citizens first. They will have the chance to reject today's rule by the global elite and to embrace real change that delivers a government of, by, and for the people. I hope America is watching. It'll soon be time to believe in America again. And just reading this is like, there's not a chance this man wrote this statement. Not a chance. It, for one thing, it's well written.
There you go. You're absolutely right.
Because when he was asked about the vote, he talked about his own properties in Scotland. So fascinating. Hey, something I know is going to shock you. Clinton failed to hand over key email to the State Department.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
She didn't.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe it. Associated Press writes, former Secretary Hillary Clinton failed to turn over a copy of a key message involving problems caused by her use of a private Homebrew email server. Homebrew email server.
Yeah, I think they use that just to typify the cobbled together nature of what she had.
Okay. Sounds delicious. You know, like something I want to drink. The State Department confirmed Tuesday the disclosure makes it unclear what other work related emails may have been deleted by the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee. The email was included within messages exchanged November 13th, 2010, between Clinton and one of her closest aides, Deputy Chief of Staff, Huma Abedin. At the time, emails sent from Clinton's BlackBerry device and routed through her private ClintonEmail.com server in the basement of her New York home were being blocked by a State Department spam filter. A suggested remedy was for Clinton to obtain a state.gov email account.
You think?
Yeah, if you're going to be a Secretary of State, maybe you should have a state.gov email. Let's get separate addresses or device, but I don't want any risk of the personal being accessible, Clinton responded to Abedin. You know, you can manage two emails. It is possible. I actually have four emails I juggle.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is dumb. It's absolutely dumb. And, you know, you could even have it on the same. Well, okay. She was concerned about. Maybe she'd want to have a separate device. All right, well, fine. You check your personal in Gmail or something like that, and not actually have it downloaded on your device. So, anyway, it's just craziness. Uprising in the Rust Belt. Donald Trump's road to the White House begins here on a four-lane highway. This is from Politico. Just east of Pittsburgh, past the roadside taverns, burned-out gas stations, and parking lots choked with weeds, up into the dark fingers of the Allegheny Mountains, and then down in the valley that was once home to steelworkers, coal miners, and party-line Democrats. Regis Carl Heim once counted himself among that third group, a farmer's son. Carl Heim grew up doing two things, voting Democratic and growing potatoes. There were a lot of good years in potatoes, he said, and everybody and their brother grew potatoes here in Cambria County. But today, Carline, blue-eyed, 58, and graying around the temples, spends his days behind the wheel of a giant coal truck. But the declining coal industry has hit Carline hard. Anyway, we're starting to run out of time, but I just want to sum this up. Basically, he voted for Bernie Sanders, so you think, okay, well, he's going to end up being a Hillary Clinton supporter, but no, he's like, I'm voting for Trump.
Wow.
He said, there's some things that worry him about the GOP nominee. We don't know his background. He's a bit outspoken, but he likes that Trump is talking about jobs. That's what we need, which is why Carl Heim said, in the big election, I'm going for Trump. So, and the rest, there's an article I encourage you to read at thepulse2016.com written by Paul DuPont. He basically says it's Rust Belt, in parentheses, or bust for Donald Trump. If Trump doesn't win Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, he's going to have a hard time cobbling together 270 electors he's going to need. So we'll see if he does it. This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.
New York to L.A. We were teenage dreaming, front-seat-leaning. Baby, come give me a kiss. Put me on the cover of the Rolling Stone Uptown.
Is God punishing me? Does he hate me? What did I do to deserve these trials? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Pain and trials are commonly assumed to be signs that you do not have peace with God. Even the famous sufferer in the Bible, Job, endured accusations from his friends that his hardships were punishment from God. Yet the Bible offers several purposes of trials in the life of a believer. One such purpose is that hard times allow us to experience the fullness of God's comfort and grace to the point that we are able to comfort others that are in affliction. The Bible says, "The God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction, with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." If you want peace with God, give us a call at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org. That number again, 515-635-5465.
Do you want to take advantage of the marketing potential within social media, but you're not sure how? 415 Communications LLC is a communications and social media consulting and management firm located in Des Moines. Let them help. Go to 415communications.com. That's 415communications.com. And they can help you get an edge on using social media for your marketing, for your business, campaign, or organization. Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, our last segment, and now you've come to actually Brian's favorite part of the show. I have to admit, it's growing on me. Not my favorite part. I like the interviews, but Brian loves this, so we're going to continue doing it, even though he's not here today. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable, yet you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
This is from Reuters. A Florida burglar who posted a Facebook video bragging about a $500,000 jewelry haul has landed himself and one of his accomplices in jail, police said on Thursday. Officers from Pinecrest, Florida said they arrested Radarius Glenn Collins, who is 18 years old, after he uploaded the video to Facebook on May 27th. His friend Marcus Terrell Parker, who is age 27, was arrested after another burglary on June 9th, police said. They're still searching for a third suspect, can't read today, who was seen in the video in the passenger seat of the car flashing $100 bills to the camera. The video, yeah, which runs more than 7 minutes long and has over 3,000 views, showed the men bragging about their illegal earnings, exclaiming, "We got a safe. Can somebody say check, please?" The man in the driver's seat makes sure the traffic light is still red and proceeds to proudly reveal his bag of cash to the camera while the other two men cheer. Well, at least we knew he was following, you know, traffic.
Yeah, he was obeying laws. The traffic laws.
Yeah, that warms my heart.
At least.
The burglar stole a safe from a home with a jewelry valued at more than $500,000. Wow. Police say Collins and Parker later burglarized a second home and stole jewelry valued at more than $10,000 and a screwdriver that would later tie one of the arrested men to the burglary. Not the jewels, but the screwdriver.
The screwdriver.
Yeah. One of the arrested subjects told police that he and another two subjects stole the stolen jewelry to a jewelry and watch shop and received $1,300 each in return. Michelle Hammontree, communications director for Pinecrest, told Reuters that the Facebook video helped police establish a link between the burglary and the jewelry store where the suspects pawned their ill-gotten goods. The bag featured in the video is the same one given the suspects at the store. "It was just one dumb decision after another," Hammontree said. Police said that while they are seeking a third suspect in the May 27th burglary, it is unclear whether he had involvement in the second break-in. So, okay. First of all, if you're going to steal $500,000 worth of jewelry, maybe you want to get a little bit more than $1,300. Just saying. Okay.
Yeah. My goodness.
So this is, you can't do math very well. Second thing is, to you budding burglars out there, maybe not post stuff on social media. I'm just saying. I know we've become a society where our life is lived on social media. I've been guilty of that. I understand that. But I can guarantee you, first of all, I can guarantee you I will never steal somebody's safe. So I want to be very clear about that. But you certainly won't see me bragging about it on social media if I ever do. So that just blows me away. I mean, did they not think that they were going to get caught? Wow. Wow. This isn't the first time this has happened. I mean, this happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, if they were smart enough just to, even bragging about it, if they wouldn't have had stuff that actually ties them to it in the video.
Crazy.
Crazy stuff.
Well, hey, send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks for listening.